everyone. Welcome to the Don't Tell Me What to Do podcast. This podcast is diving into conversations that pivot from the advice you're given and show a new path forward. And I really think that in the age of social media and choice overload, we are just constantly bombarded with opinions on the right and best way to live a fulfilled life. We're told what to eat, where to live, what to do, what job to go after. The list just goes on and on. So this season, we're diving into specific topics and getting into the weeds about how to think just a little bit differently so that you can live the life that you feel really good about living. Today, we're diving into the topic of relationships, which is one that I'm sure you've gotten so much advice your entire life around how to approach dating, what you should be thinking, what you should be doing, how you should be presenting yourself. So I found this a perfect topic to dive into this season. I'll kick it over to the episode where we have a dating and relationship expert named Theora on, and we'll just dive right in. Enjoy. All right. Well, I am so excited to welcome Theora Mensch to the podcast. It's been relationship and love is a topic that ever since we kicked off the podcast last year has been something we really wanted to dive into. And it's something that everyone has their opinion, including your mom, your grandma, your sisters, your brothers. So it was first on my list when we were recruiting for season two. So Theora, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really exciting to be here.
How would you introduce yourself? This is a new field. This is a new type of coaching. Like, I'd love to hear a little bit about how you explain your business and what you're doing.
Yeah, generically speaking, I am a dating relationship expert and educator. But the way that that applies to people is I teach people how to call in the love of their life.
And I know this is something relatively new for you in the past couple of years. So what inspired you to become an expert in this field? I'd love to know about that moment where you took that first step in the process.
Yeah, I would say maybe like the most catalytic, I think that's a word, moment was at a Tony Robbins event 4 years ago. And he said something. He said, everybody wants love, but almost everybody settles for connection. And I just had that oh no, sucker punch moment to the stomach, because I realized that's how I had been living. And for me, that really shook my reality and sent me down sort of a self-fashioned pilgrimage / rabbit hole of, well, then like, how do I make love the thing that I create versus settling for a connection that's good enough?
Yeah.
And so that for me kind of launched me in the direction of where I am now. And of course, it was a much more winding roller coaster like path before getting to teaching what I teach. But that more than anything, I think was that like the screeching brakes moment of, oh my gosh, that's so true. And I don't want that to be my life, especially if I only have this one precious life to live.
It is so true. I mean, I think people have a different perception of love and wanting people to have those type of relationships. But as you get older, I've heard so many people say of like, well, ultimately you're just looking for a financial partner, or ultimately you're just looking for a friend. It's like everyone settles on just one aspect of a relationship that they think that they might deserve in the long term.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that is sort of, not to be too hyperbolic, but I think that's beaten into us. I think that we're super saturated and normalized to disappointment, having our hearts broken, et cetera, et cetera. And everybody who's not doing very great at love in the first place, giving each other relationship advice. and what I think is that ultimately we actually want a lifelong spiritual growth partner. One of the things that I like to say is Disney didn't create the fairy tale. It just built an empire on top of it. Because I think that yearning for having somebody whom we get to experience deeper and deeper layers of erotic expansion and deeper layers of being known and being seen and getting somebody to learn from and with for a lifetime is actually what all of us want. And we look around at the status quo And we think, well, actually, that's what's available to us, versus really taking a intentional, creative, playful approach to how might I create what I really want, versus settling for what a bunch of disappointed people have told me is available. Does that make sense?
No, I think that makes great sense. How, when you had this light bulb moment around connection, which I think is really powerful, and then getting to these stronger beliefs that you have now and teach, what were those light bulb moments along the way that really helped you formulate those or helped you shed the layers of advice and expectations that have been hounded into you?
Yeah. So I never quote people quite correctly, but I know Steve Jobs has a quote about you can't connect the dots moving forward, but you can look back and constellate them backwards. And I think that actually there were all of the sort of subliminal seeds planted when I was younger. So my mom passed when I was 10 years old. My dad remarried a few years later to a really wonderful woman, then divorced 7 years after that. And also when I looked at a lot of the couples that were in my sort of sphere of awareness, like my friends' parents, most people were divorced or were in marriages that I wouldn't want to be in or like wish on anyone. And so there was always this sort of uncanny curiosity that I had of either there's got to be a better way to do this thing, or why is everybody keep trying to do it? And since everybody keeps trying to do it, I was like, there's got to be a better way to do this thing. And so I think that sort of that unusual curiosity, given that I didn't inherit a relationship model. It was like, it was very one-sided. And so I think in some ways that's given me a sort of interesting scientific brain around studying relationship, to understand how it works. Why do we do the things we do? And how do we really apply the principles and what I have identified in sort of like the empowerment era, the empowerment revolution, where, you know, like personal development is pretty cool now. It's definitely been popularized. And we're applying these really magnificent, creative paradigm shifts in business, in health, in financial abundance, in our own like self-healing. But the place that seems to be the most stagnant and lagging behind the most is creating powerful partnerships. And I think that's because one of our most primal human fears is, are we even lovable? And most of us fear that we're not. And so when that fear is running the show, of course, it's going to lead us to being more incurious. But I think that in some ways, some might describe it as like somewhat tragic upbringing around relationship, I think in some ways really like liberated me from internalizing the status quo. Because I saw the status quo and I thought, that's really weird. Like, why are we doing that? So I kind of got access, I think, to a creativity that a lot of people don't get access to because they take what they've seen growing up for granted.
And looking back on these moments, sort of connecting the dots of, okay, yeah, now it makes sense that I was so fascinated by this. Did you have moments after that Tony Robbins event and as you were digging in that helped illuminate that and helped show that it had been something that you had been interested in all along, or that you wanted to reformulate your ideas around relationships?
Oh yeah. So so after that event, I learned about these terms, masculine and feminine energy. And it was the first time I'd ever heard anybody talk about that, not to be confused with gender identity construct, et cetera, but sort of masculine, feminine energetics, which have been taught for millennia in various lineages like Tantra. And I was trying to figure out what's my energetic, what's my energy? And I couldn't figure out, am I masculine or am I feminine? Am I masculine or am I feminine? And so I went over to a group trainer and I asked, I can't figure this out. What am I? And he so lovingly looked at me and said, oh, honey, you are feminine. And I just started bawling and I said, what if I don't want to be feminine? Because I associated my femininity with being like attacked, receiving unwanted attention, sexual assault, weak, just, and I remember when he said that, I just felt like hunting season had opened and I was the prey. And it was a really fearful thing to experience in that moment, obviously metaphorically. But it spoke to me at a molecular level. So I just started consuming books and podcasts and signing up for retreats and events to really understand what this sort of invisible language of energy was that was at play all the time between me and every person that clearly spoke to me at an intrinsic level, but that I'd never heard. And then the more I've studied, the more I realize, a lot like love languages, there's these invisible dynamics that are at play in our socialization, in romance and eroticism, in the way that we relate, in the way that we date, that a lot of us just don't even have language around it. But once you give language to these dynamics, you get to actually start playing and doing it on purpose in a way that's fun and exciting. And they're predictable too, which is kind of cool. And so then it just becomes easier to show up for the kind of relationship you want, versus it happening to you, which is the way that most people move around the world. So,
yeah, I love this concept. Do you have an example of maybe an energy you weren't aware of before, and then you were able to put a word to it and saw that play out?
So like the biggest ones for me and, masculine, feminine energetics. And my teachers actually call, instead of calling them masculine, feminine, they call them alpha, omega. And that is to sort of, again, give us another degree of separation from associating masculine with manly and feminine with womanly, because that's not really what's going on. But understanding those energies and understanding that I can actually intentionally create that yummy, juicy tension that we think of as chemistry or passion, or I can intentionally create that resonance, which is where we really find that authentic, intimate companionship component. And I can begin, you can begin to participate in the moment and really choose like what is the experience of connection that I want to have with the person in front of me, my partner, my date, what have you, which is really beautiful, because then you just become more and more fluent at blossoming love into being. Am I making sense?
Yeah, no, it's totally making sense. And I feel like so many of us have these experiences where they feel that energy, they might reflect on it after the fact, but I don't think anyone ever talks about it in a proactive nature. So I love being able to think about it in that way. Similar to how I think love, the idea of love languages and conversations about that has really opened up people to having a, like, for lack of a better word, language to talk about how people give and receive love that I think a lot of people have a hard time putting words to.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Love languages have become very well known. Oftentimes, if you meet somebody and you ask them what their primary love language is, they'll know. And it's the same thing where that language, whether you knew it or not, was at play throughout your childhood. It was at play throughout your life until you learned what that was. And then once you learn it is, you actually get to do it intentionally. Same thing with the energetics of intimacy.
So you're learning all about this. You're working with all of these teachers. How did this interest then pivot into a career? Was it always something that in the back of your head, as you were exploring more education around it, you thought that you might want to teach it? Or did that come about a little bit differently?
It came about a lot more organically. So I was just studying to self-understand. And I also think to selfishly give myself a shot at a truly remarkable partnership. And as I was learning, as I want to do, I was sharing what I was learning with the people around me. And I was starting to watch as the relationships and the dating experiences of the people closest to me began to really transform and become fulfilling, healthier, more resilient, more open, all the things that most of us crave and want in a partnership. And so from there, I really began to entertain the idea of, hey, maybe I'm good at this. Maybe the fact that I'm taking all these different schools of teaching and really weaving them into a shared tapestry might be an effective way to support people to create relationships that are those growth portals that I think we all want. And so then from there, I started to give myself permission to work with clients, and then it snowballed into what it is today.
Yeah. And I think it's so interesting when you're coaching people, especially on the topic of relationships, because you, your own relationship story will obviously evolve over time. And I'm sure that you're giving lessons to people that maybe in that exact day you needed to hear as well. So how has this business, or even just exploring this topic, affected your own relationships and your own relationship with love?
Not to get too woo, but heck, let's go there. I sort of affectionately call myself a love warrior priestess because I'm so passionate. Now that I see that this is something that we can intentionally create, it feels a little bit crazy not to scream it from the mountaintops, because I know that deep down it's what almost all of us want. And then for me, as far as the way that I show up, the way that it shifted my relationship, well, it's had profound effects on the relationships I have in my family, with my friends, the relationships that then, because I do a lot of calling forth of really challenging people and inviting them to live high caliber, high integrity relationships in every area of life, including the workplace. But it really helps to, for me, when I'm showing up in a partnership or when I've been dating, to do the courageous, uncomfortable thing. I love Brené Brown, right? Choosing courage over comfort is one of my love mantras. Because so often, right, like we want to shut down if our feelings are hurt or if we're afraid we're going to get rejected. We want to know what they want first, because we don't want to say what we want, because what if we say what we want, then they might not want the same thing, or we might scare them off, or da 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 da, right? And so I found that, like, committing my life to supporting the creation of lifelong fulfilling partnerships has really holds me to the highest standard of, like, am I choosing courage in this moment? Am I choosing open-hearted this in this moment? Am I assuming positive intent? Have I made my boundaries clear in such a way that the other person can not only understand them, but also knows how to co-honor them with me, right? So there's a much higher caliber conversation happening in the background for me. And all of it comes down to, and this is what I teach, and if the people listening take anything away, is, what are the agreements you have with yourself for how you show up for love, for how you show up for partnership, for how you show up for relationship? Because those need to be unconditional. Those need to be your commitment to who you are. What are the agreements you have with yourself for how you show up for love, for how you show up for partnership, for how you show up for relationship? Because those need to be unconditional. Those need to be your commitment to who you are. That is beyond your wildest dreams. That maybe,
yeah, and I love that, because it's so individual too. It's not about you and the other person. It's you first taking that opportunity to really think about yourself before you go into that partnership.
It's so important. And desire is maybe the part of us that we're least connected to. I was just talking to a client today about, she said, until she was like, I mean, like, I kind of knew what I wanted. I would give, like, the surface level boilerplate. This is palatable. Like, people can digest this and no one's going to, like, get their, hair. I'm thinking panties in a twist. and she was like, but it wasn't until you asked me those deeper questions of, like, no, what do you really want? Like, if you could have it all your way, what would you want to create in this lifetime when it came to love? And the more that, and what's, most people, A, don't even know how to source their true desire. They start to think, well, what can I have? Like, there's a menu, like a desire menu, you know, and I have to kind of help them etch a sketch that and be like, there is no desire menu. Like, you're making it up. But once you source that desire, which is really sort of the origin point of your power when it comes to creating partnership, that's when all of that noise and that guesswork of what do they mean? the like entertaining a bunch of different possible futures, that kind of start, that noise and static starts to fall away, and the decision making of how to move forward and how to really like have fun again. That's like where the magic happens, and decision making becomes easy and clear and pretty friction free.
And it's interesting how you were talking about how people will look at that menu and think, what can I have? Of, oh, well, I feel guilty if I'm asking for more than these like few things, or who am I to say that I want this type of partnership? And I think that's one of like many different societal norms that we're told what we can have and what we can't have in relationships. But I'd love to know, of all the things you hear from your clients, like what are these norms that you find yourself constantly fighting against, especially when you're working with new clients?
Mm. Well, the first one that came to mind when you were just talking about that is when I'm doing this sort of excavation to find the real gemstones of people's desire, it's oftentimes in sort of this furtive tone, they'll confess to me like, yeah. And like, I don't want to sound superficial, but you know, I want him to be attractive. And it's like, that's not superficial. Like, you are going to be with this person for a lifetime. And most of us have broad spectrums of what we find attractive, including energy as well as, you know, physical looks. And so I think it's really interesting that there's this, and I'll just use the kind of like the status quo as like a catch-all term for like the proverbial mm-hmm. they, right? But it's like there's that you're superficial if you want to be attracted to the partner you're going to be with for life.
Like, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah, right? And so I mean, if you're specific, you want them to have blue eyes and brown hair and freckles or whatever, like, okay, right? Like, give yourself permission to want what you want. And of course, because this is a status quo and this is a recycled belief that isn't even ours individually, but is something that gets handed down to us either from family of origin or now we have social media. Before it was production media, like rom-coms, magazines, movies, Cosmopolitan, for heaven's sakes, as well as
The Bachelor.
The Bachelor, as well as our own relational traumas, right? Is one is this idea that the kind of person you want to be with doesn't exist. Or if they do exist, they're all taken. So that's definitely a paradigm shift that I get to support people from graduating out of and really releasing themselves from. Some of the other things is like love will find you when you aren't looking for it, which is then followed by you just need to put yourself back out there, or like get out there again, you know, which are mm-hmm. They're totally paradoxical. There are a couple other ones. Oh,
my favorite is, you need multiple burners going. Like, don't be too intense with one person that you're dating. Like, definitely date multiple people at once so that you can play that game. I have heard that is one that like has always irked me like my entire dating life.
Yeah. And there's like, it's interesting too, because there are some really like high value ways of playing in. And I don't say playing as in like playing it as a mind game, but playing it as in a game that's actually like fun and exciting and romantic to enjoy. Having multiple people on standby because you are not wanting to be too much is definitely, it's coming from a place of like fear and self-protection. Versus one of the things I do encourage people to date multiple people at the same time, but not from like a scarcity standpoint, but as like you're really getting to know each other. And very often we will go all in on someone without knowing whether or not we are aligned on values, whether or not we're on the same page, whether or not this person is going to treat us well. Like, we'll go all in on someone simply based on the fact that we like them, not based on a pattern of behavior that this is somebody with whom it might be wise to invest your time, energy, money, resource, attention, vulnerability, et cetera, right? So some of those things are also like descendants of the pickup industry. And there is a pickup industry out there that where people are learning like how to pick people up, men and women. And you can feel it in the way that they market their teachings as well.
And pickup industry, you mean people that are not, they're not there to have a relationship. It's something that you need to be aware of their energy, or what do you mean by pickup game?
Yeah. So one of the things I love about the way that I do it is I'm combining understanding how human instinct has informed the way we socialize and the way that we've built social structures. Also incorporating the energetic game of the ancient love practices that have been around for a long time, but were historically only available to an elite few. And then is also understanding like what are empowered ways to participate? Cause we do need approaches and we do need strategies. Cause again, the status quo is you have to stumble into it. Mm-hmm. And if you're doing anything other than stumbling into it, then you're doing it wrong. If you're giving it attention, you're doing it wrong. If you're getting educated about like what you really want, you're doing it wrong. And so that's one of the biggest hurdles for the work that I do is helping people be like, hey, learning about this doesn't mean that you're doing it wrong. Thinking that you're going to create something really magnificent by simply stumbling into it is a little bit crazy.
Yeah. And we don't do that with any other part of our life, which is what I think is crazy too. I know you had before told me your metaphor around like losing weight. If somebody said like, oh, I think I might just decide to lose 10 pounds. Not sure what, I'm not going to do anything about it, but I just have the thought.
Yeah. One of the things I hear, and so the women that are most attracted to work with me are like successful, meaning like they've really like poured themselves into building a career that they're proud of, maybe a business. They are spiritual, if that word doesn't work, or like people who are invested in their personal development. So they're these empowered women. And when they look out at the sea of the status quo, it's a bunch of relationships that don't actually look that fun to be in. And so they're like, okay, well, I could do me and I could be single and happy, or I guess I could do a shitty relationship. And of those two, the being single and happy obviously looks way more attractive. What I love to offer is the third option, which is what about in a fulfilling, lasting, healthy, exciting partnership, right? And so instead of settling for single and happy, let's aim for what you really want. And what I hear from a lot of these women when I'm talking to them is something where it's like, well, I'm open to a relationship. But then when I ask them, okay, so like, what are you doing? They're not actually open to it. They're saying it, and it's a way of salving and kind of numbing themselves out to the fact that they're not participating in the process at all. And so I ask, like, you know, would you say, not that I'm prescribing weight loss, right? But would you say like, I'm open to losing 30 pounds? Or if you wanted to feel, let's say, 30 pounds healthier, would you look up personal trainers? Would you maybe get a gym membership? Would you maybe sign up for a class? Would you maybe start researching health and nutrition protocols? If you suspected that there was something wrong with your thyroid, would you go to the doctor and get it checked out, right? So in the realm of health, we totally understand that there is this massive bank of resources and mentors and guides and approaches to creating the energy-rich, vital experience that we want in our bodies. But when it comes to love, most people just keep doing the same thing and hoping that somehow they're going to magically stumble into a partnership that will fulfill them for life.
Yeah. And instead, they're probably just repeating old patterns. And I mean, I think we've all been there.
Oh my gosh. Yes, we have all been there, which is why more women than ever are saying, I'd rather be single and happy than in a shitty relationship. When the truth is, they would love to share this gorgeous life they've built with somebody with whom they feel met and excited by and adored and admired by. Like, duh, right? But there's a lack of curiosity that gets, that's the norm. It's like normal not to be curious about how might we do love better, or how might we do love intentionally, or how might we date in a way that actually increases the probability, if not make it inevitable, to have an epic partnership for life.
Do you think it's a lack of curiosity though, or maybe just a fear, like a deep-rooted fear that I don't deserve that type of partnership? There's nobody that would want the partnership I have. I think I think a lot of us have those deep-rooted fears that maybe putting yourself out there even more is going to make you're going to feel even more vulnerable than you did.
Oh, absolutely. That the lack of curiosity is the symptom of the fear. Because again, like, I mean, how many times have you heard love will find you when you're not looking for it? Mm-hmm. I hear that more than anything. And that's one of the things that my clients are the most frustrated by hearing, because basically we're saying like, yes, we're acknowledging as a collective, like, yes, you want this, but you shouldn't be trying, which is such a bizarre way to approach anything that we would want to influence the outcome of.
Yeah. And I think when some people say that, the one aspect of that that I like is make sure you like have a fulfilling life, invest in yourself. But I think it gets too paired with, but then don't even think about dating somebody. They need to just magically, everyone, even in the age of online dating, everyone would admit that they want that story of my car broke down and somebody drove by and I met them. Like, everyone wants that magical meeting that's serendipitous and that had no planning whatsoever, which I find interesting too. And I don't know if that's a symptom of the television shows or the movies that we watch, or just a fear and actually having a planned meeting go well.
I think it's a couple of things. I think it's because I think we love love stories. When you see two people who are in love with each other, what do you inevitably ask them?
How did you meet?
Yeah. And so I think humans, we're storytellers. We love stories. I think that's a big reason. I love teaching people how to actually like shift the way they're showing up so that meeting in the wild is totally possible. Like, you don't have to date online. If you want to have an epic love story, you can totally meet people in the wild. So I think some of it is wanting there to be the story behind it. I think the other thing is the planned meeting is, in online dating, people are so saturated. Like, you could meet 7 new people a week if you were willing to work really hard at it. And unfortunately, the culture of online dating is one where the norm is disappointment, discouragement, lack of investment, lack of treating it in a special way. Whereas more historically, when your meeting happens in real life and you have that electrical current that flies between you, you'll actually both show up in really courageous and generous ways.
Yeah. That you won't go in expecting it to be bad and then being slightly surprised if it's a little bit better than bad. It's, you're going in like so excited that this happened.
Yeah. And so what we've created in the online dating world, there are ways to date online that are more fun than the way that most people are doing it. But for the most part, the online dating world is one of convenience. It's one of boredom. It's one of, again, like I said, disappointment and feeling discouraged. A lot of people describe it as a chore or like it's a second job, right? And it's kind of like, well, anything coming out of that sort of energy makeup, I mean, you'd have to have a bit of a miracle for it to go well. That's not to say that some people don't find awesome relationships dating online, but they're a teeny tiny minority compared to the volume of people who are dating online.
There's a fatigue too of after, like, you go in those first couple of weeks, you're going strong, and then you have a few bad dates and then you sort of, you close up again. So how do you work with your clients, especially single women that are actively dating, to continue to bring their full self every date that they're going on, knowing that even though you bring your full self and that you know exactly what you want, that the dates might not go well, but how do you encourage them to keep showing up?
Yeah. First and foremost, it's always about anchoring to that desire point, because when you know what you're showing up for, if you're just showing up for a date, then there isn't a lot of momentum or inspiration there. But when you get really clear that the love story you want to bring into being is one in which, like, you and your person honor one another, you support each other to succeed, you learn from each other for a lifetime, you get to experience deeper and deeper layers of sexual satisfaction, your love inspires the people around you, it, you know, encourages your friends to have better relationships, you turn heads in restaurants, right? When you understand, when you commit to and get excited about that being the legacy of love that you want to create in this lifetime, going on dates starts to become exciting because it's like, ooh, I wonder how I can show up courageously to this connection or this person such that I'm actually increasing the odds of getting to create that legacy of love. More simplified, right? Like, so that's the long game. That's the thing that we get to tether ourselves to in order to keep showing up in really beautiful ways. But it, as far as just the way I coach people to approach dates technically is to have two agreements with yourself. One is, how much fun can you generate on the date? And two, how generously curious can you be around the other person?
That for any interaction, yeah, with somebody.
Totally. Because usually what happens is we sit down in front of someone and we're immediately cross-checking them to our checklist, whether we've consciously created a checklist or no, right? So in that sense, like, this person who you've maybe known for 10 minutes, is like having all this pressure put on them to be like, are they your Mr. Right? And that, like, any tentative connection is going to collapse under that kind of pressure versus like, hey, can we create this like sort of like fertile breeding ground for the two of us to have fun, to really get to know each other, to have real conversations, authentic conversations. That's where like the seeds of possibility get planted.
Yeah. And I would even think taking that mindset into somebody that you maybe have been married to for 10 years, like going into a date and saying, how can I be the most fun version of myself? How can I be genuinely curious? I think that's a really good mantra to have in the back of your head as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually, what's really fun is the messages that I get from people who are in partnership who will jokingly say things like, I wish I was single, you know? And yet, if you look at a lot of the stuff I teach, I just shared something about making eye contact as like one of just like the funnest, flirtiest, also sometimes most challenging ways to connect with people out in the wild. And one of the things I said is like, hey ladies, like, when was the last time you gave your person a smolder? Like, when was the last time you caught their eye from across the room and just, you know, sent them a little mental message like, yeah, you are freaking sexy. And what I love about doing this work and really meeting people at that point in their timeline where they're single and they're in this like beautiful sacred space of doing prep work is you actually get to set your relationship up to be a, like, the nature of it is wired for growth. The nature of it is wired for authentic, dynamic conversations.
Yeah, I think that's great and something that people can then take to the rest of their lives. So in closing, I'd love to know, what would be the one thing that you would want to see change in our next 5 to 10 years of how we approach relationships, knowing we are going through this period where we're open to career coaching, financial coaching, all of the personal development that's now been, quote, cool to do now? What would you want to see change, especially in regards to relationships?
First things would be two things. One is to really open ourselves up to what it looks like to let being single be really sacred and be a really beautiful, like, self-growth time. That there, like, being single is not synonymous with unlovable or any of the other things. Like, there's nothing wrong with being single. I think it's really beautiful, and I think it's actually a really important thing for adults to spend intentional time, like, maybe a year, maybe several months, whatever it is, really being in relationship to self. And then the second would be that everybody gives themselves permission to be like a relational novice. And when I say that, I say this so lovingly, but we're really relational idiots. Relating is like a skill set. Being able to communicate effectively is a skill set. Being able to create boundaries, like, these are skills that we develop. And for some reason, we don't give ourselves permission to self-educate on how to be relational masters. And so we're a lot of relational novices reinforcing these shared cultural collective beliefs that don't serve us. They don't uplift us. They don't build us up. And so I'd love for people to really give themselves permission. Like, what would it be like if I did invest the time, the energy, the money to becoming the person most qualified to bring this love story that I want to create into being?
Yeah. Instead of what I think most people in society do is, I'll pay for therapy once I'm about to get divorced.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what I also love about that is that taking the time to show up as the best version of yourself with the person that you are most closest to in this world also has a ripple effect into how you're showing up with your friends, how you're showing up with your coworkers. So I think if you're not taking care of that number one relationship that you have, you're not going to take care of the other relationships as well.
Yeah. It also negatively affects every area of our life. Like it is one of the most common things said by the personal development leaders, Tony Robbins, Alison Armstrong, Brené Brown, is that the quality of your life is in direct proportion to the quality of your relationships. So you have an amazing company that's doing that's creating incredible impact. Your employees are doing well. If your primary partnership is not thriving, or you don't have the primary partnership that you do want, and you feel stuck in a lonely space where you don't have the power to affect change, that success comes very empty-handed as far as its ability to support us in fulfillment
and show up in the world and how we want to show up.
Yeah, exactly.
How can people follow you and learn more? And I'd love to know if there's any resources that you specifically recommend that people dig into that might have helped you at the beginning of this journey.
Yeah. So as far as getting access to what I teach, the easiest way, and this will lead them down the rabbit hole if that's the direction they want to go, is to just follow me on Instagram. So at Theora Mensch, TheoraMensch. That's my Instagram handle. And from there, you can find my website, the blog, everything else, free workshops, etc. And then as far as a resource, well, I have a bunch of resources that I would want to recommend. So I would also, if you go to my website, theoramensch.com/blog, I have a whole reading library recommendation so that people can start wherever it is that they want to start. So if it's like for new relationship models, there's a section on relationship models. If it's about understanding men better or understanding women better, because turns out we are not carbon copies of each other. There are sections for that as well. But I would encourage anybody who is resonating with them at a deep level, and they're thinking, man, maybe I could actually create what I want, and I don't have to settle for second best or something that's good enough, is simply to give themselves the permission. Like, if I was a novice about this, what are all the avenues of research that I would give myself permission to pursue?
It just takes one step and just being curious. So thank you so much for sharing your story, for sharing these tips. I think it's so valuable just for anyone at any stage of their life and relationships, just to pause and really reflect on what kind of energy that they're bringing to their relationships and their partnership and how they want to show up. So thank you.
My pleasure. And thanks for letting me come in and hopefully rattle some cages, you know?
I hope you did too.